Hello, I'm Ben.
And I'm Jenny.
And we're playing Doctor. Each week our podcast presents an uncensored discussion of a Doctor Who episode. Once in a while we'll even cross the time streams and visit a classic episode. And eventually we're going to talk about every episode ever.
All of them.
All of them.
Discuss all the episodes.
All of them. Now, we're going to keep this podcast mainly spoiler-free. So this is going to be episode 5 of the first season this week. So you should be safe from episode 5 back.
Yes.
We won't discuss anything beyond that too much.
Mostly.
Mostly. Mostly harmless.
Yes.
Now, we're also, though, to cover the new show when it starts up again in August, we're going to keep going with like an extra addendum podcast where we can, you know, just a little short that we'll throw out every week in addition to this podcast so that we can hear what's going on in the rumors and the views and, and things like that.
Just so we can get some things off our chest.
Yeah. Now, we have our guest joining us again this week to continue our conversation from last week.
So we have Ben Rollman and Gracie Bear.
Hi.
Thanks for coming back, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So, you guys ready to talk about not Aliens of London Part 2, but instead it's World War 3?
Right. Ready to rock it.
Okay.
All right. Let's do it.
All right, so Jenny, kick us off.
All right, so it starts right back up again where we left off. The aliens are electrocuting all of the alien experts in the big secret club meeting. And now I'll just say real quickly, this is where I learned right off the bat not to fast forward through the recap of the last episode, because a lot of shows where they do the little recap at the beginning, I just skip through it because I've already seen it recently.
Right.
This one, they lead right into it. They do the recap and then it starts the show right away.
Right. It doesn't recap opening credits, then start the show.
It's, exactly.
They tie them together.
It just kind of blends right in.
Yeah.
You know, the doctor, he's getting electrocuted with all the other ones. He rips the ID card off and he says, "This may work on the humans, but not on me." And he kind of jams it to the Slitheen's throat.
Well, he has the Slitheen have like this throat communicator thing that I guess is connects
like a
them all.
Tracheotomy kind of thing.
I don't know. It's some way. Maybe it's a translator or something.
Maybe.
I guess it has them all networked. So when you shock one, it shocked all of them.
Right.
Which comes in handy because this is going to be how Jackie, who's, you know, we left her last week trapped in the kitchen with the police officer Slitheen, cornered. Well, when they start getting shocked, all the Slitheen are getting shocked. And that gives Jackie a chance to get away when Mickey comes to her rescue. Mm-hmm. And it gives Harriet Jones, MP Parliament, Flydale North, a chance to escape with Rose from the cabinet room when the one that was killing Vinesh, the secretary. And then, I guess, the doctor is, of course, able to escape. So,
and the doctor is able to survive the shocking because he has two hearts.
I would think that because I guess wearing the name tags at chest level would, I guess, maybe that's how they were killing them.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously getting zapped with that much juice, you're, you know, going to be hurt. But I guess since it was heart level, maybe that was the idea for the name tags.
Right.
I didn't think about the doctor, his double heart thing being one of the reasons why he didn't get bugged on it.
That's kind of one of the little nitpicky sort of things that I have. And It definitely is very nitpicky, but it seems like a lot of times the doctor is able to escape and save the day just because he almost has, like, these superpowers. Like, you know, this doesn't work on him, but it works on everybody else.
Well, yeah.
And they don't always explain why, you know? Yeah. So maybe he's just getting power from the yellow sun or something like that.
Well,
it's his mutant healing factor.
He got here from the planet that John.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, you know, like me, you grew up watching the old episodes on PBS. There was a Fifth Doctor thing where we find out that he can survive in the vacuum of space for like 4 or 5 minutes if he holds his breath.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he has all these extra little, I don't know, gifts or powers.
Yeah.
But he is, to be fair, he is an alien.
Yeah.
And so, you know, double hearts, that comes in handy.
Yeah, so like I said, I don't really. It doesn't bother me about the show. It's just every once in a while, I just think, are they just using this as a convenient way to get out of this situation? Like, oh, he's an alien. Eh, he's all right.
Yeah,
he's all right.
That's your little escape clause. Get out of the jail free card.
Exactly.
Which I mean, later on, I think the sonic screwdriver becomes the little.
It kind of always has been that like that, isn't it? Like
yeah.
just
it's the RTD
point
too.
Some. Yeah. Just do a little jiggery pokery and you're all good. So
it can cut barbed wire. It can open doors. It can slice tomatoes. Order yours today.
Mm-hmm. Toupee makes it 1999.
Never needs sharpening.
Batteries not included.
It's actually powered by the Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Rose and Harriet have escaped, but they're like, oh, we need those emergency protocols. So they, you know, they're being chased by this Levine. They run back to the office. And this whole scene where they're kind of running back and forth through the hallways, it's almost Scooby-Doo-like. You know, they're just running back and forth through the doors, and they even have a little wacky music going in the background.
Yeah. Meanwhile, though, the Minister Green, or MP Green, or I guess he's now acting Prime Minister Green.
Yes.
When the doctor comes back with all the soldiers, he blames the doctor for killing all the alien scientists, since the doctor's the only surviving one.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the doctor's like, you know, no, the Prime Minister's the alien.
And they're just all kind of looking at him like...
Yeah, he's like, you're not going to believe that, are you?
Nope.
And did the security guard look American to you?
Is there a way to look non-British?
Well, he had an American actor look. He almost looked like a young Fred Thomas.
Okay.
The guy from, he used to be on Law and Order.
The Fred Thomas who ran for Congress or ran for president?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The politician who used to be an actor who's now an actor again.
I didn't notice that, but okay.
No. It's just one of those things is like, that guy really looks American, which is odd when you're talking about the English because, you know,
Yeah. It didn't stand out to me, but once you pointed it out, I could see it. So.
Right. So now I have to go back and watch it again just for that.
See, I think that's going to be the goal of this podcast, is have people watch the episodes, and then after they listen to this podcast, go back and go, wait, I don't remember that.
Yeah. Or watch it beforehand, or they can watch it simultaneously.
Oh, that would be interesting. Mm. We've actually done other podcasts where we watched a movie, and you get these long, dead pauses where we get caught up in the movie, and everybody stops talking and forgets to... Oh, no, we're reviewing a... Reviewing this.
We did that once for what was that movie we watched? It was the old movie we watched together, and yeah, there was like a 15-minute gap, and we're like, "Oh yeah, we have to keep talking." But I hadn't seen the movie before, so I was it was charade. So
yeah.
Same thing. Sorry to get off track, but
no, that's what podcasts are about.
Yes.
So the doctor takes off running from the soldiers in the room,
mm-hmm.
and they get him cornered. And so now the Slovene general, or the Slovene occupied general,
yes,
skin suit, orders his execution.
He's like, well, guess what? You shouldn't trap somebody in a hallway with an elevator behind him.
Yeah.
So he makes his escape at the last second. And next up is a little scene that I just found hilarious, where Green and the general are in the elevator together, and they're... I don't even know where they're going, but...
Well, they're going up after the doctor.
Okay.
Right? And they've told the guards, hey, upstairs is off limits. We've got this. Emergency protocol, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And now they're in the lift, and...
And Green says, victory should be naked. You know, he doesn't like wearing the suit. And the other guy says, well, you should be naked. Your body is magnificent.
Celebrate.
It's like, yeah. I was like... This is a little creepy. I mean, especially considering that these are family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's like,
little
be naked.
A little awkward.
Are they nudists or something?
That's what they're actually trying to take over the Earth for, is they want to turn it into a giant nudist colony.
That could be.
Their secret plan revealed. And this is a European show, to be fair. And I've been to Europe, and I've been to some of the beaches. And that may not be a good idea. There's good and there's bad.
And the Slovene are generally very, very bad.
Yeah, it's out.
That'd be disgusting.
That would be somewhere I would fit in and feel good about myself. If I was on a Slovene beach, I'm looking pretty good. Yeah, compared to the Slovene.
Okay.
Compared to the doctor, not so much. I have better hair. But yeah, anyway. So yeah, and what is it? Now they've gone on the hunt, though. For Harriet and Rose.
Mm-hmm.
This is Margaret, I guess, who's doing that. Or I forget what her name is in this. I just remember from the next time.
I think her name is Margaret. Margaret Blaine, I think.
Okay.
So they've got her trapped. She's got them, Rose and Harriet, trapped in the office. And, you know, they're Rose and Harry are hiding behind curtains and behind desks and stuff. And, you know, they're talking about how they can smell their adrenaline and brittle bones or something like that.
Yeah, there's the old one or whatever.
That was a really good description when she was describing the two different smells of the older lady and the younger girl. That was really interesting.
Yeah.
Sex and hormones.
Yeah, so they've got him trapped and they're about to find him. And Harriet jumps out and says, "No, take me first," which I think is, you know, it's a good example of Harriet's character that she would sacrifice herself to save this girl.
Well, you know those Fly Down North girls. They're very brave, very full of gumption.
They are. They are. Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, knowing what we know, you know, comes up in the future, it's, you know, kind of telling about, you know, she's willing to take the bullet. She's very upstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, most politicians I've ever seen would probably stay hidden.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, mm-hmm. All right, one less voter. She probably wouldn't have voted for me anyway. Or, she's not from my district. Should I jump out? I don't know.
Take her first.
Yeah.
She's young.
So, you know, I think this episode makes you like Harriet just a little bit more.
Yeah.
Or these two episodes.
Yeah,
she's a very compassionate character. But the doctor jumps in at the last minute, saves the day with a fire extinguisher.
Yes.
Which was kind of pretty cool.
So, and then they run back. They get the emergency protocol briefcase and...
But they're trapped in the cabinet room now.
Yes.
And there's no way out.
Nope.
Except through the front door, which has the Slitheen. They've got them cornered.
Mm-hmm. So the doctor comes up with a bluff real quick. Grabs a bottle of booze and says... Points the sonic screwdriver and says, "Hey, I'm going to point... You know, I'm going to hit this thing with a sonic ray or whatever and triplicate the flammability of the alcohol. We'll all go up in flames."
Yeah.
It's like, so let me ask some questions. You know, what are you doing here?
Well, like the who are you?
Yeah.
And Harriet answers up with, "They're aliens." Well, okay.
Duh.
Thank you, Harriet. That was nice. That solved it. Never mind. We're good now. They're aliens. Got it.
She's like, well, why does he have a northern accent? And Rose says, of course, lots of planets have a north.
Yeah. That seems to be the running thing with Tennant's accent, is lots of places have a north.
Eccleston.
Wow.
Well,
Tennant was Scottish. I'm on the wrong... Spoiler, there's another doctor soon.
And he's much more attractive. Hope,
you know, and I was going to mention this to Rim. To Ben. No, there was a Ren McCormick, and anyway... And then I'm Ben, and then he's... So, Ben, yes.
Do you need some coffee?
Yeah, I do need coffee. We're recording this early on a Sunday morning, mm-hmm. or early for me, and I'm sure it's early for you guys. You're an hour behind us.
Yep.
But with the old episodes, growing up with that, did you think when the regeneration issue came up on the new show that you were more prepared for it than some of the new fans were?
I think I was more prepared only because there's this level of... media awareness that you didn't get as a child watching PBS, because there was no internet, as a kid I'm not getting a lot of BBC news, so if there were newspaper articles or anything at the time saying, oh, this doctor hasn't renewed his contract, so expect a regenerated episode where we get a new one. I mean, now it's, you know, months ahead of time that Eccleston's only going to be on for a year, or Tennant's only going to be on for so long, or Matt Smith's only going to be on for so long. So I didn't anticipate it as much because you didn't know ahead of time. Knowing that, though, I think when you finally find out that their reign is coming to, or their time on the show is coming to an end, I felt a little more sad about it. I felt a little... the older episodes, I was a bit shocked. I'm like, no, they're, you know, what's happening? I don't like the fact that this guy that I've just gotten used to is leaving. But it was a little bit exciting too, because then you could find out who was next. Now it's like losing a friend. You feel you've spent so much time with them, and you know it's coming, and there's just nothing you can do about it.
Okay. Now, one of the things though that I kind of noticed is that people seem more upset about it, like they weren't expecting that the doctor could change.
Yeah.
Where, you know, those of us that grew up with this, we know that, yeah, we might not know when it's going to happen.
But it's always in the back of your mind.
Yeah, it could happen. Could this be the regeneration episode? And I think it was a little, like you're saying, you know, we didn't have the media connections that we had, you know, now back then. But So there could be a, once you knew about the fact that regenerations could happen, the Doctor could be in a life or death situation. You could be seeing the last episode of this Doctor. You know, it's like, oh, you know, it was like an extra layer of tension. Is this when he dies?
Yeah.
And it just seems though we got used to the fact that, well, it can happen. The Doctor changes. It's just a fact of life. Where the, it seems to me some of the newer audience was more upset when, you know, the regenerations happen, because it's like, you can't change the Doctor. Mm-hmm. This is my Doctor.
Well, imagine any other show that you watch. Like, let's say Chuck gets into a mission that he can't quite get out of, and suddenly they replace him with a new Chuck.
Yeah.
You know, there's just, people will watch the show because they like the main characters. And if suddenly that main character is gone, it's like, well, am I still watching the show for the same reasons? And then they have to examine, well, am I like, do I like it for the writing? Do I like it for this side character, the companion, which also may change? Do I like it for the effects, or do I like, you know, what do I like it for? So I think that may be why, I don't want to make the excuse why it hasn't got as popular in America as it has, but I think the shifting of the main character after so many years may be, you know, why it hasn't picked up so much.
No, that you can have a lot of, you know, fans of this specific Doctor companion combination. And when it changes, for some people, it's just like a completely different show.
And it sometimes ends up being that way, because when the Doctor leaves, you'll lose the showrunner or the writers or the people who will write for that Doctor. So it ends up being almost a different show.
Right. Yeah, I can see that.
I think it's a very good point. Yeah, because I know people tend to get very stuck in their ways and, you know, get used to a show the way it is. And in Britain, it's... The Doctor's always been this show, like, where he changes and, you know, they're used to that sort of thing, but...
There's no American equivalent.
No, except for when, like occasionally change an actor, you know, for a couple of seasons or something, but even then people have trouble with that, like...
Oh, yeah, like on the Roseanne thing.
Yeah.
When they changed out the oldest daughter. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. But I wonder if that's why the changing of James Bond was so easy back in the 60s and 70s and stuff, where it's just like, oh, yeah, you know, for Britain, it was fine because, oh, yeah, this is just, you change the
actor. Regenerated.
James Bond is a Time Lord.
Yes.
But anyway, back on this, though, the Doctor and Harriet and Rose are now trapped in
cabinet.
The cabinet room, and they were able to lock themselves in because this is one of the most secure rooms on the planet.
Because Slitheen have finally called their bluff and said, you can't set this alcohol on fire, you know.
Triplicate the flammability.
Yes. Like, no. But they've revealed that they're actually a family business. They're not trying to invade the Earth. He hasn't figured out why yet, because that's when they call the bluff. So,
that was a good scene. There was a good bit, too, where when they figured it out, and he was like, oh, well then, you know, toast all around, and he handed it to Harry, and she's like, to the left first, and he had to hand it to
Oh, yeah. Way.
I really like that bit.
It's, you know, never an excuse not to use good
manners.
That's
right.
Just because the world is being destroyed.
Those Fly Down North girls, brave and conscientious.
Yes. Yep. And polite.
Polite, very polite.
Very, you know, they have etiquette. She may have gone to a finishing school of some kind.
Very likely.
Yeah, because more than likely, some of the better schools for that kind of thing are in Fly Down North.
Yeah, I was going to say the famous Fly Down North finishing school.
Now we, with the Doctor trapped in there, they didn't use the Prime Minister, I guess.
Because he's a little skinny guy.
Yeah, and I guess originally this was going to be Tony Blair. And, you know, it was intended that the Prime Minister that died was going to be Tony Blair. But at the last minute, the actor who had been hired to play the Prime Minister and was supposedly a Tony Blair impersonator looked nothing like Tony Blair.
Whoops.
And that's why when he falls out of the cabinet or the cupboard, they don't get a real good shot of his face. It's just a guy in a suit with the hair then drops because he looks nothing like Tony Blair.
Well, they never say his name either.
Right. They just referred to the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
But Harriet, in the last episode, referred to, she wasn't one of the babes. And that was a British thing that that when the Tony Blair revolution happened, there were a lot of female members of Parliament elected, and they're referred to as Blair's babes.
Oh, okay.
And she said she wasn't one of the babes. which if you don't know that, you just think, okay, she's whatever. You can just kind of gloss over it if you don't. But if you know the little politics behind it, you can go, oh, okay.
As someone who didn't know the politics, I just assumed it meant that there were very few women parliamentarians. So I just thought there were a close-knit group because there were so few of them. So, I mean, that's good information to have.
That's kind of what I assumed, too, yeah.
Okay. So now we're back to Mickey's flat, right? I guess when Mickey saved Jackie, he took her back to his place.
Yeah.
Which, okay, they get there. He tries to call Rose in the cabinet room, and because of the jiggery-pokery in the second episode, her phone works. And, you know, when her phone rings and it's your stupid boyfriend or whatever.
Of course you gotta answer it.
Well, no, you don't have to answer it, but, you know, Flydell North, Harriet Jones, says, well, call for help. You've got to have contacts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, they're all dead downstairs. So, you know, remember those unit alien experts?
Those were all of his friends that could have helped.
He needs more friends.
Yeah.
He's not a very social person.
He doesn't know Jack Harkness yet. Or does he say...
Oh, spoilers.
What?
Not yet.
He hasn't met Jack yet.
No.
You don't know Jack.
Captain Jack.
She gets the text message from Mickey.
With a picture of the Slitheen on it.
Yeah, so now we know the Slitheen are out there, too, and they're in danger.
Mm-hmm.
So, Policeman Slitheen is still looking for Jackie, so she's a little creeped out about that. She's back at Mickey's place. He calls them in, and they... I guess the doctor's going to use Mickey to see what's going on.
He's
going to
have him log into the unit website and find out some information for them. And suddenly the doorbell rings.
Yeah.
And it's like, what, 1 o'clock in the morning or something?
About 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, and Mickey's like, go answer it. I don't want to answer the door. Who answers the door at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're being chased by aliens?
Yeah, I mean, it would be a good idea to suspect maybe it's the alien has found you.
At least, like, look through the peephole before you open the door or something.
Or lock it when you come back in, because then she comes back in and just closes the door. I'm like, why at that point would you not at least put, like, a deadbolt? Like, just lock it.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. So, of course, it is the policeman.
That's looking for her. Yeah.
Yep. Found her.
Gotcha.
So, meanwhile, the doctor, Rose, and Harriet are trying to figure out exactly who these creatures are.
Yeah, where'd they come from?
They start taking, like, what they know of them, narrow it down.
Yeah, they're green.
They fart a lot.
Good sense of smell.
Which doesn't seem to go well together.
No. With a good sense of smell and the gas, I gotta wonder, it was, you know... Well, I guess you don't smell your own.
Well, maybe they like the smell of their own farts.
They're very smug.
Yes.
Like lilacs in the morning. Ah.
They do enjoy being naked, so they probably enjoy their bodily functions.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I want to visit their home planet.
No.
Which we find out because of all these things, especially like the farts that smell like bad breath. They're from...
Raxacorico falopatorius.
Did you practice that? That's amazing.
No, I didn't.
She actually has been able to... Because when we first were watching these episodes last year...
Mm-hmm.
She amazed me that she could say that without even stumbling.
Raxacorico falopatorius.
And my thing is Raxacalacalacalabob. The Slovene planet.
Expialidocious.
And I actually remembered how to spell it without having to look it up.
That was what scared me when she was doing the show notes for this week. And last week, she had actually put it in the notes without... I mean, she was just typing and put it in. And I think you had a hyphen in.
I had a space in there or something like that. It's all up here in the Time Lord memory bank.
That scares me. But they figure they're made of living calcium from the Slitheen planet. Raxacalifragilicious
expialidocious.
Thank you, Ben. And so throw vinegar on them is going to kill them.
Yeah.
Because vinegar dissolves calcium.
Yes. Just like Hannibal.
Yeah.
Crossing
that was a
Alps.
Nice little thing.
Little history lesson.
Yeah, except Hannibal actually would build fires around the boulders and get them really hot and then pour the vinegar on it.
To just kind of steam it out or something?
And shatter them.
But yeah. So,
good guy, though. Blast at parties.
Killed lots of elephants.
But anyway.
Like 1 in 20 elephants make it on that trip.
Do not be an elephant.
Maybe he was
Or a Alabama Crimson Tide fan. You know, the big elephant thing. I don't know of any other sports team that has a elephant mascot. So.
I don't know.
Do the Republicans have a softball team?
That was good.
Okay. Jackie grabs all the vinegar out of Mickey the Idiot's kitchen.
He's got lots of pickled foods. Mm-hmm. He's got the pickled onions, the olives, the pickled eggs.
You kiss this
man? And the doctor,
man?
Of course, says, yeah, you yeah. kiss.
It's like, eh.
He's definitely got to have some weird breath, you know.
When she tosses the stuff on the Slovene, though, I like how the initial response of the Slovene was like, what the hell did you do? This look of, what is that? And then,
explodes into globs of green spaghetti and goo, like a Nickelodeon show or something.
Yep. Yeah. I was trying to figure out, was it spaghetti?
It looked like it. It sure did.
Yeah.
Some kind of pasta. Green pasta.
Spinach. It was spinach linguine.
See, now I'm hungry. It's about, it's coming up on, lunchtime, early lunch here, maybe brunch.
There's a little pesto thrown in with the pasta to make it green.
We need to stop. Okay.
A little Parmesan on the side is delicious.
The doctor, now everybody's safe.
They have a little drink.
Yeah, because they have, they got the non-triplicated flammability port there, so.
Yeah. He doesn't seem to like the port wine.
Yeah, which is weird how the doctor goes back and forth on alcohol. Because I know third doctor, John Pertwee, seemed to be a connoisseur of fine wine.
Mm-hmm.
And he drank wine a lot in his years as the doctor. Yeah. And I don't know. This doctor...
Well, it could be that DNA switching, too. I mean, it's a different body type. You have different cravings.
Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. And they don't have the same palate, so they're not going to taste wine the same way.
Right.
So...
Okay. Well, so now we've got more people showing up, though.
Yeah, and they're really random people, like the president of the North Sea Boating Club shows up to 10 Downing Street.
And it's like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, the journalist is like, why are these random people showing up?
But they have something in common.
They're all fat.
Yeah. This is the, it's the 10 Downing Tubbies.
And, maybe they're having like a Weight Watchers meeting or something.
It could be. Weight Watchers Anonymous maybe is the thing in Britain.
The 10 Downing 10 Stone Club. I don't know what stone weighs out at, so.
I'm thinking 10 stone would be pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Maybe if we have any British listeners, they can explain to us what a stone is.
You can actually go into Google and with their translation, you can type in a weight and it translates it to pounds or kilograms or whatever for you.
Okay, we'll have to Google that sometime.
I'm going to do it right now.
But,
you guys keep talking.
And you let. Okay. So these people show up, and when the Slovene that was harassing Jackie and Mickey dies, the other Slovenes seem to know about it.
Mm-hmm. So it's like they have this little psychic link, I guess, through their
neck things.
Neck.
Ah, okay.
Things. So, because it's kind of the same thing when he put the ID card that had the lightning bolts coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They all got electrocuted, and it seemed to come from that almost.
Yes, yes.
So
that's why I was thinking that was networked together, but this seemed more like they had a sense of it.
Yeah.
Where they could kind of like, I feel
disturbance in the force.
Yeah. Spaghetti, it's like 1,000 strands of spaghetti cried out in horror.
When you're suddenly eaten.
But they've Green comes out now, announces that the scientists are dead,
mm-hmm.
and that we are,
we're under attack.
We're under attack. There are massive weapons of destruction.
Yes.
In space,
pointing right at the Earth.
Yeah, with they could be fired in 45 seconds.
Yeah,
and we'll be destroyed.
So we need to go to war, and this is sounding a little familiar. It's like. Massive weapons of destruction.
Where have I heard? That sounds familiar.
May or may not be there.
All right, for our edification, a stone is 14 pounds, so 10 stone would be 140 pounds.
Not very fat.
Nope. No.
You need to... These guys were at least 20 or 30 stone.
Yeah.
Maybe they need to lose 10 stone.
They could stand to... Yeah, some of these people could stand to lose 10 stone.
Very much so.
5 or 10 stone could help them. But this was 2005 when this episode is out. Like, I want to say, April of 2005?
Yeah.
So, weapons of mass destruction was still in the news.
It was still a thing.
Okay. And so the connection with how the 45 these weapons could be launched in 45 seconds kind of mimicked Tony Blair's thing about, you know, well, they have these weapons of mass destruction and they can be fired in 45 minutes and boom, mm-hmm. you know. So I think they, you know, obviously this was an intentional connection.
Definitely.
To the way politics, you know, play us for some of these things.
So they ask the UN for the nuclear codes to blow up the mothership, which is hovering just over the UK.
Yeah, so I was kind of, I don't know, I got a little lost on this when apparently the Brits have nukes, but are deemed themselves not responsible enough to have that.
Yeah.
So they give their launch codes to the United Nations, so they can only launch their nukes with UN permission.
Mm-hmm. We caught this, too. We didn't know if that was something they made up for the show, mm-hmm. if it was actually something that exists in real life and with other UN member states or something. I mean, we both kind of looked at each other. We're like, that's a very interesting scenario they have set up for that.
Well,
yeah.
I was going to say, I think that they made it up. I just was like, I've never heard that before. I didn't realize that they couldn't launch their own nukes.
Yeah.
I would think, you know, part of the problem with us grasping this is that as Americans, we could, you know, we can't fathom giving control of our nuclear arsenal to anybody.
Yeah.
We don't even want to give it to the other guy in the other party when his time, you know, it's, so you're talking about just turning over your nation's, you know, ultimate defense to, I don't know, this United Nations organization that, then again, maybe this is coming from being American, where we do tend to be a little bit more sovereign, mm-hmm. and, you know, by God, this is America. Ain't gonna give no nuclear codes to nobody.
That's right, Jack.
You want my nuclear codes? I send them to you. Wait about 30 minutes. You know, and here they come.
And I noticed something in a later scene where Harriet said something like, you know, due to our past history with nuclear weapons. And I was like, when did Britain drop nuclear weapons on anyone?
Well, they haven't. We're the only ones that have used them. Yeah. But I think with the testing and stuff, maybe.
Okay.
But I don't know.
I just thought it was a weird little thing that she said, and I didn't know if maybe I even misunderstood what she was getting at or something in that scene.
Right.
But
we'll have to check that out. We'll have to check out more on that. But I guess the reason they want the nukes, or get the codes, is so they can start World War III.
Mm-hmm.
And have, they're going to launch attacks on somebody, and when Britain launches attacks on, like, the United States or Russia or whoever, obviously, you know, it's going to set off the chain reaction that they set off theirs, and then somebody else, and everybody nukes everybody.
Yes.
You can't nuke.
It's just a big damn nuke party.
And then the planet's going to be destroyed.
Yep. And it's going to be just a bunch of molten lava in space.
Radioactive molten lava
yes,
in space.
Which they can, the Slitheen family business can then sell off, you know, as energy or something to, you know, whoever wants to buy it.
It's basically going to be like the cut rate Russian gas that we can buy down here at the local
yes.
quick pump place. It's good gas. It might, how you say, destroy transmission somehow. Don't know how that works. Doesn't supposed to touch transmission, but chances are transmission falls out of car. but it's cheap gas. It's good. It's very good.
Baby giraffe agrees. Like the machine.
I got it. Yeah.
They told me if you have to explain it, they so be careful. Just own it. Tell it and keep going.
Don't be apologetic for your humor.
Embrace it. Victory needs to be humorous. Your humor is magnificent.
Or humor is if we're in the Middle Ages.
What?
The humors, it's like the bile. Oh, and the
right,
blood
the humors, and okay. Yes.
Your humor's out of balance. But anyway, now, so when they sell it off, it's going to be cheap energy for other aliens
yeah.
to use. That's their whole plan.
And they're going to make millions.
And the doctor can't do anything about it because he's trapped in a box.
Mm-hmm. And apparently while all this, you know, nuclear warfare is going on, they're going to be sitting out in their spaceship in the Thames.
Because the spaceship that crashed last week actually didn't crash.
They just parked it.
That was their way of parking it so that, one, it would cause all of this, But then that's going to be like their lifeboat. They're going to go hop in that just a few mm-hmm. minutes away, get out of the way, let Earth nuke itself, and then sell it off.
Mm-hmm. And I have to wonder, is this a spaceship parking zone where they put it? Are they going to get a ticket?
Well, London parking's pretty tight, so parking in the middle of the Thames, I think, was a safe bet.
Yeah, because they probably don't have any codes saying, like, you can't park your spaceship here in the river.
Yeah, I didn't see any signs.
Yeah.
There were no parking signs. So
you have to wonder if they will all be safe, because that spaceship did not look big enough to hold all of those fat aliens. They all would be
Yeah, there is that.
Yeah.
You know, even if they stay in their compression suits, though, you know, their skin suits, that it might be a tight fit. Because mm-hmm. when we see them later in the office waiting for the phone call, they seem like they were jammed in there pretty
mm-hmm.
good.
Mm-hmm.
But now then, they've told their plan, and the doctor once again gives them one more chance.
Yep, because that's what he does.
Because that's, you know, as we've discussed on an earlier podcast, that's his deal now. You mm-hmm. get one chance. You're doing something very, very bad. I'm going to give you one chance to stop, and we can, you know, be friends again. Nope, you didn't stop. Well, now I have to stop you, and you're not going to like it.
No mercy.
No mercy.
Oh, and I did like the one little scene with the news anchor, the American news anchor.
Right.
Who says, you know, the Prime Minister Green has convinced us that the massive weapons of destruction do exist. And again, I was sitting there like, yeah, this is completely just paralleling, mocking. I don't know what it even is, but just, yeah. You know, are there weapons of mass destruction? We're not really sure. We haven't found them yet. No, they're here in this episode.
Okay. They're in orbit. That's why we couldn't find the Iraqi ones. They were in orbit.
That's
with the
right.
Slovene.
That's right.
Doctor Who politics. Yeah, this episode goes great. We have the GOP softball team. We have the weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, in space.
In space. Everything's better in space.
Yeah.
Except Tang. Which is odd, because Tang's really good for breakfast here, but in space, it's, you know.
It's already powdered. How can that be?
Yeah, but you're having to suck it through the little straw thing, and it's just, I don't know. I liked it. Anyway. You can mix that with vodka.
Oh, no, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Now I'm listening. Okay.
It's not as good as with orange juice, but it's, anyway. So on to, back to the show. We'll talk about that in the TARDIS.
Yeah. So, meanwhile, the doctor has a plan.
Yes.
He's going to have Mickey hack into UNIT, get some missiles.
The non-nuclear kind.
Non-nuclear missiles.
Less secure that way.
And fire one right at 10 Downing Street.
Okay.
Obviously, putting them in danger.
Yeah.
But saving the world in the process.
So you'll kill the Slovene, but you'll kill yourself doing it.
Yes.
Possibly.
Jackie seems a little upset by this, because it's like, well, you could be killing my daughter. Well, guess what? Your daughter's going to die. Definitely.
Yeah.
If the Slovene go ahead with this plan. Meanwhile, you have a 50-50 chance, maybe, of saving you and her and everyone else.
Yeah.
By doing this.
So he gets Mickey to hack into the UNIT site where mm-hmm. all the super secret squirrel stuff is.
Yeah.
And what's the password?
Buffalo.
Yeah.
Just Buffalo. 2 F's, 1 L.
And they use it all through the site. Oh, I keep getting pop-ups to use the password. Oh, it's the same one all the way through.
Yeah. I mean, have they ever learned how to make a secure password?
I think this is why Britain had to turn over their codes to the UN, because they can't make passwords worth a crap.
Very good point.
You know, I was going to go with the assumption that, you know, it's a military website, and I've worked with the military in the past, and we're constantly having to crack down on them to, you know, for internet security. But... yeah, yours may be a little bit more accurate. It's like, yeah, guys, really? Buffalo? And you use the same password on everything? It's the Queen's Gmail account?
Buffalo.
Password?
Yeah.
And Buffalo. And Buffaloes aren't even, like, a big British thing, are they?
That's probably why no one will ever think about it.
Exactly.
Like, you know, we don't have Buffaloes here. It's, who'd guess it?
Exactly.
Yeah, I gotta quit doing that.
They should have made the password Spanish Inquisition. Because no one would have expected that.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition!
Okay.
Sorry.
So they're able to hack in, and they launch a missile from one of the subs.
Yeah.
Off the coast of England.
And meanwhile, the UN has voted to give the codes to the UK.
Ah.
So now the clock is ticking.
Slovene are up in their office waiting for the codes.
Yes.
All conveniently and packed together in one tight-lit location.
This is where they got, you know, really packed in there. They're, you know, they're out of their skin suits, so they're at actual size. They're all crowded around, you know, ring, damn you, ring!
Mm-hmm.
Waiting for the phone call. And meanwhile, the missile's on the way.
Yeah.
And thankfully, though, you know, somebody, you know, the soldiers downstairs picked up that, oh, wait, there's a missile on the way. Because nobody else was going to bother to tell them, oh, hey, you know, guys, you're probably all going to die.
Yeah, so one of the soldiers runs in and to go warn them and tell them to evacuate the building. And then he sees all these hideous green aliens in there. And, sorry. And he just kind of oh, runs out.
In a very British mode, wrong opens the door and says, oh, carry on, and then leaves.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you walked into a room full of naked people, whether it's big green aliens or regular human beings, you would probably just say, oh, sorry, and well, run
I don't
out.
Know. It sounds like wrong a party.
Only if you have the vodka tang.
There you go.
It's not just for breakfast anymore. So he runs out, thankfully, evacuate, you know, hits the fire alarm. This is two episodes. I'm going to start counting how many times a fire alarm gets hit. Because we had, in the first episode, Rose hit the one at the yeah. diner when Plastic Mickey
mm-hmm.
was going to get them. This is now two. So the official fire alarm count is two.
Two. And there was a fire extinguisher used earlier in the episode, too. Does that count?
No.
No? Okay.
No. I'll go ahead and, you know, yeah, that was cool, but this is an actual fire alarm. He breaks it with his gun. The soldiers all flee, thankfully. And then we have, you know, and he warns the reporters and stuff all outside, mm-hmm. hey, get out of here, you know, shoots the gun
everybody
in the air.
Run!
And what they don't show, though, is the tragedy. Because Flydale North is just down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And when he fired that gun in the air, the trajectory actually went at an arc through the air and killed someone or injured someone in Flydale North. If we remember last episode, what was Harriet Jones at 10 Downing Street for? She had an appointment to talk about medical care and the cottage care in Flydale North. Because that wasn't passed, this young man died. Senseless death, another victim of the Slovene interfering with politics and free health care.
Just another unseen victim of this whole situation.
Yeah, there are no victimless crimes.
No.
And this is why you should never fire a gun up in the air.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you don't know where the bullet
you
will
never
come
know. At. That's really a tragedy.
Yeah.
The more you know.
Luckily, you didn't kill the sheep in the neighboring field. Thank God.
People are expendable. Sheep, not so much.
It's Britain, man. They need those sheep.
That's right.
It's how you keep the tweed industry going.
Yes. And shepherd's pie.
Yeah.
Very important.
We've got to have that. But anyway, so yeah. He evacuates the area. The missile's coming in.
Yeah. And
blows up.
Blows up the whole
and kills
block.
Everybody.
Looks like
yeah. Everybody's dead. End of the series.
No.
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 Well, how did they survive that crap?
Well, Rose actually came up with something smart. She mm-hmm. said, oh, you remember earthquake training? Because we have lots of earthquakes here in Britain.
Wait, what?
Yeah. We're going to go hide in this cupboard over here, and we'll stay safe. You know, so if things fall around us, then
yeah.
we're protected. But actually, I've heard that that's not the best way to go, because you could actually get crushed by something. Like, if you're under a table.
Yeah. But if you're earthquake. In a... I would think, though, if you're in a small room,
mm-hmm.
like a cupboard, there's not going to be that much chance of thing. There's less things
that's
to
true.
Fall on you.
Yeah. So she did come up with something.
You'll get hit with a skin... I mean, granted, there was a skin suit, a dead body...
Yeah.
And some files.
And lots of booze.
And lots of booze.
I think there was two dead bodies, actually. Because you get the Prime Minister and the Secretary.
Oh, the Prime Minister, the Secretary, and then George from the first episode. Mm-hmm. His skin suit. So two dead bodies and a skin suit.
Mm-hmm.
Just flopping around everywhere while the building's exploding.
Yep. And all
that'd be kind of gross.
Yeah, it kind of would.
You got the dead PM, you know, like flop down on you or something.
Get it off!
I don't want to touch the dead thing!
At this point, he wouldn't even need that floppy, because it's been a couple days, right? And he's probably a really stiff dead body.
Ooh, so now you're getting beat up with, you know, the rigor mortis?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought his politics were stiff before, but... Hey-o. Hey, I'm here all week. But, all right, so they survive in the cupboard.
Yeah, I mean, all that's left is this big metal box, and as soon as the rest of the building is gone, they come crawling out of the metal doorway.
Yeah, which just pops off now.
Yeah.
Doc in a box.
I'm thinking, Doc in a box. I'm thinking he might have used his sonic screwdriver to open the door.
Yeah, or maybe it's like a safety mechanism that once the rest of the building has been destroyed, then there's nothing to hold.
Pull the ejector thing and blow the pod.
I mean, you would think that, yes, this room is very safe, but you have to have a way to get out of it at some point.
Not very safe if you're cooked alive inside of it.
No. Okay. Or if you suffocate because you've used up all the oxygen in the room.
Yeah.
So,
So they come out, they're all safe, and Harriet steps up.
Yeah.
Sends the soldier off to do his job and to let everybody know that the threat's been eliminated.
The crisis has passed. We don't even have a prime minister now. Rose says, you should run. Or the doctor says
Doctor
that.
Says, yeah.
No, don't be silly. I'd vote for you.
Yeah.
You know?
So she hasn't even really thought about... She's not very ambitious with her political career. She's just there to actually do a job.
Yeah, she's just taking control after the crisis. Which, you know...
It's what's neat. She's stepping up to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
But before this, she's always just been like a low-level politician.
A backbencher.
She was just there to... Yeah, backbencher is what they call it. And she's there to represent her constituency and do a good job for them. But she really isn't an ambitious politician.
And that's not what we need in politics. We don't need any of that.
No. We need people who are power hungry and want to be in control. So she'll never be very successful.
No.
Except the doctor says that he remembers who she is now.
Yeah.
Because her name's been bugging him through the whole episode. He's like, I remember her. But he remembers that she was...
She's been elected prime minister 3 times, and she's the architect of Britain's golden age.
Yeah.
And we'll find out some more about that later.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Harriet goes off and, makes little speeches in front of the news cameras, and she's actually, putting on a pretty good face for the news. She's...
Yeah.
Kind of inspirational.
We've met the challenge and survived. America. Huh. The human race stands with its head held high, blah, 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 blah.
And God the rest of the world hears you.
Yeah.
Basically is what she
this
did.
This will be our Independence the Bullhorn Day. Speech.
What? Well, it's not fair. The Americans have one. Now we get ours. Where's the fireworks?
So anyway,
yeah, I know it bugs you when I do the cheesy British accent poorly.
Just a little.
Okay,
a little.
That's why I do it.
So meanwhile, Jackie and Rose are watching TV, and Jackie's getting a little ticked off that Harriet's taking all the limelight. Oh, it should be you up there in front of all the cameras.
Yeah,
it's like she's taking all the credit.
You should get a knighthood, you and the doctor.
Yeah, yeah,
no. Which he does get, just not this episode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
but Jackie finally says, okay, so I guess he's good in a pinch. I guess I better get used to him now that you're infatuated with him. Let me invite him to tea. We'll have some shepherd's pie.
Yeah.
It's a good thing that the sheep wasn't killed.
Yeah, because the sheep survived, we now can have our fresh shepherd pie.
Yeah. Rose gets a phone call. It's the TARDIS calling, and they have a little picture and everything, which was kind of awesome.
Okay, now this is going to get a little spoilery. So we'll try
just
to keep it vague. But for those of us who've seen all the episodes, when the TARDIS is calling, if you look at her phone, it's got the little TARDIS symbol, and it says TARDIS calling. And then you can either answer or silence the call. And I thought that, for people who've seen all the episodes, the settings and silence were...
I completely forgot about that.
I think that may be reaching for it, but okay.
I know. I keep forgetting to mention. Yeah.
Maybe ignore is just too rude in Britain. Maybe. They ignore calls.
They silence the ringer.
See, I would think that would be more like a Dalek thing, though. Silence your phone! Silence your phone!
Exterminate the call!
Exterminate the call.
When you're in a movie theater.
No texting in the movie theater!
Silence.
I've been working on my
Dalek
impression.
I would actually
Dalek
like to
impression.
See that. You do a pretty good Dalek.
Yeah.
That was nice. So anyway, though, he calls Rose,
She invites him to dinner.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't do this. She's not my mother. I have better things to do.
I thought he was a little dicky here.
Yeah.
That's my opinion of it. I don't know about you guys, but when he's like, you know, all he had to do is come to dinner with, you know, Jackie. Hey, I'm going to take your daughter off around the galaxy and possibly kill her. You can at least have dinner or tea with her.
Right.
Yeah.
But his thing is like, well, no, I don't do that. But if you're going to have tea, you're just going to get left.
This kind of reminds me of the gruff Eccleston kind of, we mentioned it before, where he felt like he was coming off almost a military campaign, and he has that mindset, and maybe he's just, he doesn't put up with, if it's not excitement, he doesn't put up with a lot of the niceties of humanity.
Okay.
Maybe it gave the wrong sign. Okay. She isn't,
that's true, too.
A sexual relationship.
That's right.
Yeah, he's not here to meet the parents type thing. It's like, look, I'm an adventurer. I go do my thing. I've got a timeline. If you want to be on it, great. If you don't want to be, take off.
This is getting a little too serious for me. I'm not your boyfriend. I'm not meeting your parents.
Yeah.
It's just...
He said last time, you know, he didn't want to domesticate the TARDIS.
Yes.
So, you know, he doesn't want to go all domestic here and start picking out drapes and china patterns.
Yeah. So Rose obviously makes the choice to with him.
Yeah.
But this time she's going to pack a few things. She's going to take a bag with her, you know, her hair dryer, makeup, and it reminded me of Trisha McMillan from the Hitchhiker's Guide series, where she goes back, you know, in Mostly Harmless, she goes back to get her purse and she goes to get on the spaceship and leave and, Mr. Ride.
Mr. Sorry. Ride.
So...
Okay, now, with you bringing up Trisha McMillan in The Hitchhiker's Guide, here's the little fun trivia fact for this episode, that this is going to be good. We know that the next Doctor married the daughter, he was a fan of the Fifth Doctor, married the Fifth Doctor's daughter.
The actual real-life daughter of...
So David Tennant married the daughter of Peter Davison.
Yes.
Georgia Moffat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you know who her mother is?
No, I don't.
The actress who played Trisha McMillan in the original BBC version of Hitchhiker's Guide. So, Doctor Who married Trisha McMillan, had a daughter, who was then married by a future regeneration of the Doctor.
Mm-hmm. And who also plays the Doctor's daughter in an episode,
yes.
It's very incestuous.
It's the British royal family. They're used to that.
Nothing like nepotism.
The Doctor might as well be part of the royal family.
But so I thought that was kind of neat, though, that Doctor Who, there's a connection between Doctor Who, especially when you remember that the Doctor knows Arthur Dent, as mentioned in one episode, because he refers to him as a good chap. So the Doctor basically married Arthur Dent's wannabe girlfriend.
And her name, the daughter's name, was not random. You're looking at me like you have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, I'm just, we're off on a tangent again.
That was random.
Yeah.
Yeah. Later on, apparently, the newspapers have already blown off this whole alien thing as a hoax.
Never happened.
Yeah.
But one thing that I was surprised about, the Doctor wanted Mickey to go.
Yeah.
Mickey had proved himself. Proven himself. Where originally, you know, it was like, no. You know, you can go, but the idiot stays.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's proven himself to the Doctor that, hey, you know, and to the point that the Doctor's, well, you can come with us.
And he's like, nah.
I'm scared shitless of this stuff.
My girlfriend has bigger balls than I do.
Yes.
I'm not going.
Yes.
But don't tell her I said that because, you know. Yeah.
And that was another thing, though, that I didn't expect from the Doctor, he played along with it.
Yeah, he's
so
kinda lied
when
for him.
Rose came out and said, oh, Mickey, you should go with us. And the Doctor says, no, I absolutely forbid it. He was being nice to Mickey.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a, I don't know. It's, for me, it was unexpected for this Doctor to be this nice. Does that make sense?
It's a turnaround from when he just didn't want to go have dinner with Jackie. You know, so, and then he's nice to Mickey later. So it is kind of a switch.
Yeah. But I would get, though, that maybe it's because Mickey has impressed him somehow.
Yeah.
You know, he stepped up to the game where he's still at that stage of Jackie is the most annoying woman in the universe.
Yes.
And, you know, she can stay at her little white trash house. And but now Jackie doesn't want Rose to go.
No, she's begging her to stay. And this is something that I missed the first several times that I've watched this episode. But all the things that Jackie's saying to get Rose to stay. She's like, I'll just stay. I'll get a proper job. I'll work weekends. I'll pass my tests. And if Jim comes around again, I'll say no. And I'm like, what kind of mother is this? You know, how is she doesn't have a job? Is she, what is going on with this woman? She sounds like a lazy teenager that's raising her lazy teenager
something
daughter.
Something I was thinking about during that conversation is she doesn't seem that much older than Rose. She doesn't seem like she's old enough to have an 18-year-old daughter. She seems like she may have had Rose when she was very young too. And so her life has been sort of that of a stereotypical welfare single mom kind of thing. And so I think that nice little bit at the end kind of wrapped that characterization up for us. You know, we didn't see a whole lot of that because she was dealing with exploding spaghetti slitheen kind of thing. But now we know what kind of person she is, and, you know, kind of at the last minute. But it kind of helps you think retroactively about all that she's gone through the first couple episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you put it a lot nicer than I do, because I just hear this and think, like, oh, she's kind of a bad mom. Like, she's got these kind of sketchy-sounding boyfriends that Rose doesn't want around.
Well, I mean, that's the whole kind of, you think of the single mom in the movie who has a lot of boyfriends. She's probably into drugs. She has a drinking problem. She doesn't have a job. She gets money from her, you know, the boyfriends she sleeps with kind of thing, you know. And then the daughter or son in the show has to kind of deal with them. They don't like them that much. That's, I mean, it's very archetypal character for Jackie.
So if we take the doctor out of this whole thing for the, you know, the all the episodes, take all the Jackie and Rose interactions, take out the doctor, and we have an after school special.
That's pretty much exactly it.
You know, and you could even use the same title, Rose. Mm-hmm. It'd just be called Rose, a touching story of a girl's struggle. You know, yes. Okay.
A new Lifetime film.
it would even be better as a Lifetime film instead of a after school. Do they still do after school specials?
No, they're all on Am Lifetime I that out of, now.
Yeah.
I'm just so out of date. I mean, it's back in my day, we had school specials after school. And it's called after school specials, and we liked it.
I never liked them.
I didn't either. Always, you know, got real preachy.
Yeah,
don't smoke, don't do drugs, don't drink, don't shoot your family and hide their bodies in the woods. Was that, no?
I didn't see that one.
Okay.
But,
maybe that was just a dream.
What?
Anyway, Jackie tries to talk her out of going. She still goes. This time she's packed.
Yeah.
You know, because she told the doctor, you're stuck with me. You know, here's my bags. Put that away.
And she tells her mom that basically, you know, I could go around the universe and back, and I can be back here in 10 seconds.
Right.
You won't even miss me. You won't notice I'm gone. Just like the last time when I disappeared for a year.
Yes. But at least now she's telling people she's going.
Yeah.
So there's not going to be a police hunt.
Yeah. So they, you know, she takes off with the doctor, and her mom and Mickey kind of stand there and say, she's going to be back in 10 seconds, right?
Well, there's your 10.
Okay, she's not back. Let's go home.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of sweet, actually, that she stood there and waited the 10 seconds. And
yeah.
It was a little sad, kind of. That she's like, you know, she loves her daughter. She may not be the best mother on the planet, and Rose may not be the best daughter on the planet, but Jackie loves her daughter.
Yeah, she's no Beverly Crusher, that's for sure.
Well, it was like we saw last episode. When they get back, she's got these tables full of flyers. And we know that she's not made of money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And flyer, you know, I've printed out flyers before, and they're not cheap. Even at, you know, you get the bulk rate or whatever. So she, you know, if she didn't care, that wouldn't have happened. She'd stuck up a few, you know, flyers and, you know, cried about it, got all the attention. But she was, you know, really upset that her daughter had been gone for a year.
Now, to take a very cynical view of it, because that's what I do, Rose has been able to hold down a steady job.
Yes.
So maybe she was helping to put in the rent money.
Please find my daughter because she is my ticket out of here.
Yeah. I don't think that's the case, but I'm just, like I said, I'm just taking the most cynical view possible of that whole situation.
Well, I don't know what the rent situation is, because this is one of the council estate housing things. It's
just like the projects?
This is like the British version of the projects. It's, well, I don't know if it's on the same level as American projects, But council housing, because the other show I watch, Misfits, which is an awesome British show. I think it's on ITV4, but it's and it's on Netflix. So
okay,
or Hulu. Hulu. It's on Hulu Plus. So check that out. But it, you know, it seems like the estates that they have, the council housing, they call them, are these either low rent or like public assistance housing things. And this sprung up. It was a bigger deal in Britain than it was in America because after the war, after World War II, so much of you know, their infrastructure was destroyed. And then you get the soldiers coming back home. And you get the families and the baby, but you know, you needed somewhere to put these people. And that's when these council estates popped up.
Okay.
So they're almost like ghettos, though, because there's politically there's a lot of controversy over it. Where yes, it does provide houses, but it's like you're shoving the poor into one thing. Mm-hmm. This is the political. I don't want to do politics on the show. So anyway,
like,
Section 8.
No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but also what we watched the other day, the Star Trek episode where they go back to San Francisco before the Federation happened.
The Bail Riots.
Deep Space Nine episode.
Deep Space Nine, where they were crammed into the, and it was the work, it wasn't the
Sanctuary districts.
The druggies or anything, it was like the honest workers and stuff, and they just kind of all got put into these, and I forget the names of them.
Yeah.
No, it was the Sanctuary.
Yeah,
and it was, you know, until you're not the mental kind, you're just the out-of-work kind.
Yeah, the gummies so and
fill
the
out this form.
Have-nots or whatever they call them. Call them.
Yeah, and it was the, that's what led to the Bell riots with Gabriel Bell. And, yeah, I actually discussed this on the Retina. I reviewed that in preparation for going to the Ready Room.
Oh, okay.
Which is another podcast.
You're just a mega podcast star.
I'm going to plug all the podcasts that I can. But anyway, no, so that, yeah, it's, the future has a very dim view of the past. You know, we round up our homeless, you know, put them in the little ghetto thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the poor people? Yeah, just round them up. The rich don't want to see that. But, you know, the thing is, though, with council housing, we kind of do that.
That's what it is.
Yeah, but you can get out. You're not like, you know, walled in or anything.
Yeah, it's not like you're forced to be there. It's just
right.
Like,
or all you have to do is hop in a TARDIS and you can get out.
Huh.
But no, there's roads.
There's roads.
But where we're going, we don't need roads.
Oh.
See, that's a time travel connection.
Yeah. Good one.
The doctor doesn't need roads.
No, he doesn't.
Okay. No. But so what did you guys think about this episode? I'll let you guys go first.
I actually liked a lot of the setup we have for later, I mean, going back to it, government of Britain with Harriet. Mm-hmm. And it didn't, I think that more than anything set up what I enjoyed most about the show later was the behind the scenes, what England expects and knows about the Doctor through UNIT and the government and Torchwood and that kind of thing.
Right.
I was all right with the aliens. I mean, they were pretty good aliens. It was a unique look at them being a family, which is something you don't really hear about a lot in aliens. It's usually just this unnamed blob of menace coming from the sky, but them actually saying, "Oh, this is a family business." It makes you think of them as like, you know, the plumber down the street who is so and so and sons kind of thing. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a good kind of start because you almost restart. It's like a first episode sequence almost because she goes off, but then she comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have this sort of big two-episode adventure and kind of start going out again.
Right.
So,
and this is after she's seen the end of the world already. So then coming back to...
Yeah, coming back to World War III.
On Earth.
Where the world almost ends, but...
Yeah, it's going to be messing with her head a little bit. Wait, the world ends in 4 billion years, but now it could end right now. I'm a little confused.
Time can be rewritten.
That's actually a good point. I wonder if she's looking at the whole Slitheen event and not going, well, wait a minute. I know the Earth was around in 4 billion years.
So, yeah, this is nothing to worry about. Now, I mean, your personal safety, we might not make it ourselves,
right. Mm-hmm.
But we should be able to...
The Earth will still be here. There's still people on it.
Yeah, so the Slitheen plan is going to fail. So, yeah, because she didn't really bring up, you know, her, oh, well, you know, we know the world's fine, blah, blah, blah. So maybe she's just thinking that on her own.
Mm-hmm.
where in the back of her head, she's just, yeah, well, Earth will be fine. Now, I'm more worried about myself and Harriet and the doctor and my mom, because we weren't around in 5 billion years. So maybe, yeah, we could have some trouble. But Earth is going to be fine.
Will be
it
did,
it,
chopped
it up. Would be enchanted for her to agree with the doctor and say, no, Mom, it's okay. Let him launch the missiles.
Yeah. We know everything's going to be all right.
Yeah.
We're from the future. It's fine. Trust me, Mom. Ginny, what did you think of the episode?
I liked it. I thought it was sometimes just a little hokey, but, I mean, that's kind of what Doctor Who is sometimes. It's a little bit hokey. Like, you know, I kind of like that this was kind of the return of the big rubber suit aliens from the sort of the classic episodes, you know? Because you get the Slitheen, and sometimes they're CGI, and sometimes they're just people wearing these big floppy-looking things with the big eyes.
Right.
So, you know, in that regard...
I love the baby faces.
Yeah, they were kind of cute.
Cute eyes.
Anyway. But then they were just big and fat and slobby looking.
Yeah.
But so like I said, it was a little hokey, but kind of in the good way, where it's, you know, sort of that classic kind of feel to it. But I mean, in general, I did like this episode.
Okay. And that was my thing, is it holds up to the classic Doctor Who's with there's a lot of running. There's a lot of, you know, hey, running in corridors. That seems to be the theme of all Doctor Who. You had the spooky monsters. And when my kids watched this when they were smaller, you know, when this first came out, my daughter especially, you know, she thought they were creepy looking. You know, she does, you know, did this the standard Doctor Who viewing position of behind the sofa peeking around the edge. So, you know, and then as she got older, though, she could see the comic nature of the Slitheen.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of cool. And the Scooby-Doo stuff, I don't know. You have a really tense, scary episode, and then you have Scooby-Doo chases, you know, the random doors opening. And I almost expected them to be running through. They'll run in this door and then come out that door, and then the two will run out, and they'll meet each other in the hall, scream, and run opposite of each other, and, you know. But that didn't happen, thankfully. But anyway, overall, I think it was a good episode.
Yeah.
And so I guess we'll wrap up, and we'd like to say thanks to Ben and Grace for joining us this week.
Yes, thank you.
Do you want to tell us where we can find you online?
You can find me on Twitter, at Zadrian, which is X-A-D-R-I-A-N. Or you can go to my blog, which is robotportrait.blogspot.com. I put up artwork and stuff. And actually, Grace and I, and I'll let her give her handle and stuff, but we were thinking of doing a Deep Space Nine podcast fairly soon, so... maybe in later shows
we'll
attempt that once we get it set up.
Oh, definitely. Cool. Definitely. And make sure you let us know about that, because we'll link to you on our site. Grace?
Okay, yeah. So you can find me on Twitter at Grace_Hebert. Just H-E-B-E-R-T. And that's it.
Thanks for having us, guys.
And I just want to plug your robot portraits, because I don't think that you've given them their just due. Everyone listening should buy one of these from you, because they are some of the greatest gifts I've ever given to anybody. My dad is like the hardest person to buy anything for a gift. I mean, half the time I end up just getting him a card, like a nice, you know, gift card or something. But I had the idea of getting him the robot portrait, and you did a fantastic job, and he's still talking about it. Like, he tells all of his coworkers and his friends about it, like, and he shows it off and everything. And he's a very, like, quiet person, you know, he's very reserved. He doesn't seem to get excited about a lot of things like that, but he was amped on it.
Well, thank you. So, yeah, the more people buy him, the better. I'm going to Dragon Con in a month, so if I can get a bunch of orders, that'd be awesome.
Oh, wow, Dragon Con. Yeah, so we'll definitely mention that, that we can see you at Dragon Con. We'll, so when we post this show, we'll make sure we put that in the show notes.
I won't be doing any drawing. We're just going just to be going. We're dressing up as characters, but we'll be hanging around if anybody wants to hang out. And
oh, cool.
Okay.
So what are you dressing up as?
I'm dressing up as Dr. Gordon Freeman, because it's the only character I can find that is kind of slightly balding, wearing glasses and a beard.
Yeah. And I'm dressing as Rei Ayanami from Young Genesis Evangelion.
Okay.
Wow.
So that I've got to get to. I grew up in Alabama, so Dragon Con was right next door, and I never got a chance to go, and it always upset me. So hopefully someday we'll be able to go, and maybe we'll go as the show.
Ooh.
Yeah. You have, like, you know, an official meetup or something down there.
Cool.
That'd be awesome.
Road trip.
Just not this year.
No, not this year.
So while we're thanking folks, we also want to take a thank to take a minute to thank our great friend Daryl.
Yep, from FlyingMonkeyMotoGear.com. And he did the theme song.
Yes, our intro and outro music, which is awesome.
Yes, and I think he's going to be doing a full remix of it eventually.
I want an album.
You want a whole album of
Playing
Doctor Who?
No, the Playing Doctor remix album, where he just does a whole album full of remixes for us.
Okay.
And we don't have to pay
it. That's how the internet works, right?
Well, he could, like, make it for us, and we can pimp it on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then he could sell the other ones, and let that way, so if there's any lawsuits with BBC, it's his problem. As long as I get an album of music for free.
I like this plan. Yeah. I like it.
Okay. So this could work. So thanks to everyone for joining us again. Be sure to check us out online. We have our website, playingdoctorpodcast.com. Mm-hmm. You can catch us on Facebook at facebook.com/playingdoctor. We're on the Twitters.
The Twitters.
At Playing Doctors with an S.
Yes.
I don't know what the hell at Playing Doctor is.
Some girl who has not used the Twitter for
okay.
a couple of years.
But either way.
We're also on iTunes now.
Ah, you can get us on iTunes.
So you can subscribe, and we've got a link on our homepage, playingdoctorpodcast.com, or you can go into iTunes and search Playing Doctor.
Playing Doctor Podcast. If you just do Playing Doctor...
You might get some other things.
Yeah, because there's a couple of erotic things out there.
Yeah, just like if you just go to playingdoctor.com, it's completely different from our website.
Yeah, so you want to go playingdoctorpodcast.com, search for Playing Doctor Podcast on iTunes, mm-hmm. and you can subscribe in iTunes. You can rate us in iTunes,
yes.
which helps us. You can comment in iTunes, which makes us feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
It does.
And then you can listen and enjoy.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at Jenny_Z.
Okay, and I'm at RealityMuck on Twitter.
Yes.
So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, guys.